What would you say to those who aren't sure they want us to become a large church? It was my second interview with the search committee when we got to what I call the growth question. What would you say to those who don't want to lose that sense of intimacy and connection? As I heard the question, I suddenly realized that the way we had been talking about change, growth, and the future of our congregation had been somewhat misleading. I realize we keep talking about where we are headed as if we are about to become something we currently are not. It is a common way to think about change and one reason we can resist it. I mean, if change means a leap into the great unknown, entirely disconnected to who we have been, it sounds pretty terrifying. However, like the caterpillar, which contains in itself all it needs to become the butterfly, the most successful, largest scale, most lasting and meaningful change is not actually about flipping a switch one day and becoming something else entirely. It is rather a process of continuous becoming, where the seeds of the future are always already contained in the reality of the here and now. Which is to say, as I told the committee that night, we aren't becoming a large church. We already are a large church. So whatever intimacy and connection and sense of belonging you have, you can trust it will continue, at least assuming you want it to continue. Our task as we look to the future is not to dismantle this goodness, but rather to use it as the foundation by which we will establish the systems, the structures, and opportunities for others who are not experiencing these things and who want to gain access to that same kind of deep connection and intimacy. And just as importantly, our task is to help these various clusters of community, these little clusters of intimacy, connect with one another so that the fullest potential of all of our congregation can be unleashed. This way of thinking about change is rooted in the biological concept of emergence that maybe you're familiar with. Emergence describes how natural systems self-organize in complex and powerful ways, generally by leveraging their genuine sense of connection, both from individual to individual, as well as across a whole network of communities. Organizational expert Margaret Wheatley helps explain how this biological phenomenon often plays out in human interactions. She says, change begins as local actions spring up simultaneously in many different areas. If these changes remain disconnected, nothing happens beyond each locale. However, when they become more connected, local actions can emerge as a powerful system with influence at a more global or comprehensive level. So if we understand our congregation within a paradigm of emergence, as your senior minister, I imagine my role in three ways. First, to continue to uphold and strengthen an environment where individuals can best become themselves. And then second, to facilitate connection between these individuals, encouraging this I to become a we. And as Marge Piercy says, helping us know who we mean when we say we, and for each day to mean one more. And third, my job is to help all the various clusters of we's interact with one another. This critical third role is what will allow us to emerge as a system far more powerful than any of our component parts, a powerful system of liberal values and courageous love, transforming not just our own lives, but the world around us. By this process of growth and connection, our congregation becomes not something entirely new, but rather more and more of itself. A few times over this week, I have had the chance to share with you my sense of what we can do together if I am called as your senior minister. This vision for our new ministry partnership has been formed in the context of the conversations and relationships we have been in for these past 3+ years. As such, it is my read on what is emerging within this congregation. Given what I understand as our most authentic potentials, the things that are already in us, the congregation that we are and the congregation we are yet to become, within the context of our wider community and all that it too is becoming. Already from the week, my ideas have evolved through our dialogue. As I offer it this morning, it remains a work in progress. And I only hope that this great work may continue. My vision begins with the message I offered last Sunday, the practice that we need not think alike to love alike, and the affirmation that across our differences, something more important connects us. Since last Sunday, I have already become more clear that in order for us to live out this practice, we will need a better understanding of our shared religious tradition. We need to more fully claim our history, theology, and practices as Unitarian Universalists. For it is in our own tradition that we will discover that common ground that President Emeritus of the Board, Rich Young, has termed the Boulevard. If I am called as senior minister, I will work with our staff and all of you to grow our understanding and fluency in our living tradition and to develop the skills and understandings and practices which support our theology, skills like intercultural competency, nonviolent communication, and the kind of deep listening that many of you have experienced in small groups. In turn, I will ask that each of us bring these practices to everyone we encounter to try them out in the congregation and beyond. Our capacity to live out our relationships across diversity, to turn that diversity into true pluralism, is a direct reflection of how well we are delivering on the promise of Unitarian Universalism. And as I said last week, and has felt so immediately true over these past few days, there is perhaps no greater need or imperative for our faith community or our world today. Which brings me to the second element of my vision, which is my belief that in order for us to truly unleash the power and potential of our community, we need to understand and claim our shared sense of purpose. That is how our faith, the big Unitarian Universalist, applies to this particular congregation in this particular time and place. It's the answer to that question, why are we here? What are we about? What is the most pressing thing why we exist today? During the remainder of the church year, the board will be leading a series of conversations to affirm our congregational mission. And this is good and important, but not sufficient. As ultimately, mission is not a one-time process. Mission evolves as we evolve. And so we need to keep discussing and discerning and asking that big question, why? We need to use small groups and a learning community model to foster deep networks of connection and mutual growth, and to remain open and available to the emerging possibilities of all that we are called to become. When I met with the stewardship team on Monday, I shared with them how an enhanced capacity to know and claim that sense of why will inspire us all towards greater generosity of time, service, and money, because the work will be more worthy of our generosity, and because we will know it as our work. This is the third element of my vision for all of us, that we generously share our unique gifts. Generosity, of course, looks different for all of us at different stages of our lives and depending on our circumstances. And yet the power and promise of a free religious community is that we are freely choosing to give and share our resources in service of doing something powerful and important that none of us could do on our own. It is an amazing thing that we would freely choose to give of our time and our resources, just freely choose to come together and do something that none of us could do alone. Sometimes I hear worry that as we grow, there will be less engagement from our members. In my understanding, it is actually the opposite. And in fact, I hope you measure my success in terms of how many more people feel like they are doing the work of the church, and how many more people feel inspired to give generously of their time and their money because they understand that this is their church, their vision, and their values. Your church, your vision, and your values made real in the world. Each day, we means one more. As to this growing we, what we might be up to, I'd offer two additional pieces of my vision, two that sometimes people think of as either or. That is, either we need to care for those who are already in our community, that inward focus, or we need to have an impact in our wider community, an outward focus. A number of the comments in the appreciative inquiry and then later in the survey results express the desire that we do one or the other, or at least do one before the other. However, these things are better thought of not as either or, but both and, where the two interrelate and neither is overemphasized. We are always a community in context, individual to community to community to community. And as we are blessed, so we are called to be a blessing, always in relationship. We need to build on our strong foundation of care, support, and mutual learning for those within our congregation, meeting people both within their own age and stage of life and learning, as well as strengthening connections across generations so that we can truly claim ourselves as an intergenerational community. It is one of the unique gifts of a church today that we can be a place where multiple generations come in relationship. We can do so much more with that. And in the coming years, I look forward to strengthening the relationships we have with our community partners. It's one of the reasons I was thrilled to have Shoshana here with us today, to lift that up, all the ways that we could allow these partners and our partnerships to serve as a foundation for a vast and dynamic network which brings love to all those places across northern Colorado and beyond where humanity is at risk, where life is not flourishing. Courageous, transforming love which in turn will transform and liberate us all. Speaking of the wider community, as I turn to the sixth element of my vision, it seems the population of our little corner of the world, you might have noticed, is not getting any smaller. We are already out of space. Although some hope we could avoid remodeling by starting a new campus, this too is not an either-or situation. People don't usually pick a church, it turns out, based on the one that's nearest them. They go based on where their friends are. So most of you will keep coming here. That's good. So even if we started a campus that was a little closer to you, you would still keep coming here. And as you can see, even if half of our current congregation shows up on a given Sunday, we don't have enough room. So we're going to need to deal with this. And we will. We'll make a plan. We'll create a dream. And we'll figure it out together. It actually could be a lot of fun. And allow a whole new generation to commit to this congregation and its future in a whole new way. At the same time, in addition to addressing our current facility needs, we also do need to start offering programming or small groups or occasional worship services in the various areas booming all across northern Colorado. I imagine us fostering a network of locations, all operating in ways that are particular to their specific community or neighborhood needs. I mean, why not gather some of our members living in Windsor for regular dinners or small groups, as an example? This might just become the seeds of a new Windsor campus. Or how about hosting a series on liberal religious takes on big life questions at a Foothills member's home in Timnath? I mean, for all those hundreds of families moving in there, surely some of them would be interested in a liberal religious community and enjoy the idea of not having to drive up Harmony. And those who do prefer a smaller community might choose to join up with some of these gatherings along the way. mean, we need to try some things out, scatter some seeds, see how it all evolves. My hunch is that this area, with its changing, growing demographics and its general culture of neighborliness, is ripe for an emerging network of Unitarian Universalist communities, all working together and working with our greater community. We'll see. Which brings me to the last element of my vision. All that I have shared so far is important, but this last I call the most important, because it is the one that lifts up the practice that is uniquely ours to offer, that is liberal religious worship. Other parts of society engage in social justice, social service, social connections, and educational opportunities, but no other place invites you to gather with your friends every week in song, silence, and reflection, to connect as a community, belong beyond your choosing, celebrate your highest values, grieve the difficulties in life, and find new tools and make new commitments to live your and our best life. Worship is where most people begin their relationship with our congregation, and for some, it is the most consistent and important part of their connection here. It is where we embody our mission, and where we practice who we are so that we can become who we are meant to be. At the same time, with all that pulls on our attention these days, gathering for worship is simply one of many good options our members may choose on a given Sunday. So for all of these reasons, my vision is for worship is what I call can't miss. As in, every Sunday offers an experience you feel you must be there for. Both because it is that compelling and also because you understand yourselves as a critical part of our gathered community. With our staff team and lay leaders, there is no reason worship shouldn't be powerful, inspiring, and engaging every time, something you wouldn't want to miss. So, that's it. These seven things are what I see emerging. I hope you can see with me how all of the component parts are already here, among us and within us. The vision may seem a big one and somewhat complex, but that's just because we are big and complex, a community filled with abundant life and incredible diverse people and programs. The journey from here and now to all of these things, this vision looks a lot less like turning into something new than it does unleashing and enabling the goodness that is already here. And then unleashing that goodness that comes a result of all that goodness. And then again and again and again, all this and more. And then all of that and more. So that together we keep becoming ourselves. May it be so. Amen. I'm very sensitive. I feel like we're going to get feedback from the mics. Very timely. Sometimes in the past few weeks or years, months, days, maybe hours, I have felt worried. I come by it naturally. Am I on? Yep. I come by my worry naturally. My mother is a very good worrier. So much I tell her that she thinks to love and to worry should be used interchangeably. However, my strongest commitments to myself are to act out of trust and hope and not worry, which means I've had to seek out tools that keep me grounded in trust whenever worry may try to take hold. Sometime last year, like around March, you remember March, my friend and colleague Kelly Dignan, the minister recently called to the UU Church in Boulder, sent me a link to a song by another UU minister, Meg Barnhouse, who serves our congregation in Austin, Texas. In this song, Meg is singing to the 13th century mystic Julian of Norwich, who you may know for one of her oft-quoted phrases, "All shall be well, all shall be well, and all manner of things shall be well. According to her diary, Julian heard this phrase in a vision when she was very, very sick, on the verge of death, actually. And so she tells how paradoxically it was as she was experiencing more of life's suffering that she was able to experience a profound grace and peace. So the song is basically Meg telling Julian that the phrase she heard can't possibly be true. And then Julian's response. When I thought about how I wanted to end today's service, this song came immediately to mind, and gratefully Meg and Lena and then a bunch of others, it turns out, were willing. I know there has been a great deal of worry about what will happen in our congregation or how our community will move forward. So I wanted to end the service with my strong affirmation that all will be well. In light of the events of Paris, and it holds even more significance, you know, inviting us to see the world's brokenness more clearly, and yet and not pretend it isn't there, and yet simultaneously discover a greater peace and joy, so that we do not give in to despair, but rather maintain the strength and the open hearts to keep showing up with that deeper knowing. All will be well. All will be well, and all manner of things will be well.